Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of New York Times bestselling author and award-winning environmental reporter, Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this is Welcome to Florida. And something's been rattling around in my head that you wrote about recently in one of your Florida Phoenix columns, Craig, floridaphoenix.com. And your columns are typically, I say critical, but it's critical of state government, and I think into some decision making. And I think a lot of people, and you get these comments on social media and email that confuse that for being critical of Florida. And there's a big distinction there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the people say, "Oh, you must hate the state because you're constantly writing about shady government officials and crooked developers and rapacious road builders." And I'm like, "Well, wait a minute." I love Florida. This is mm-hmm. my state. I love the diversity of it. I love, all the things about it. If I had a foam finger that said Florida number one on it, I'd be waving it. I'd be shaking it like a Polaroid picture all the mm-hmm. time.
I am of a similar mindset. I through the fortune of my profession, get to travel all over the country and increasingly the world. And when I talk about Florida, I have recently been talking about Don't Say Gay and all the runaway development.
Oh, you said it.
And yeah, the growth and the limitation of voting rights and Big Sugar and all of the problems. And I don't want myself to be confused as a hater, because like you, I love Florida. I could move anywhere I want, and I would if I chose to. I am so critical because my love for this state is so deep. And I feel like Florida should unanimously be considered the best state in the nation for our history, for our culture, for our beaches, for our environment, for our cuisine. And that it's not is a condemnation of largely folks in Tallahassee who are taking so much of what made Florida great away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always tell people, look, we've got an award-winning state park system. It's won mm-hmm. national awards four times. That's more than any other state. We've got the beaches that are consistently ranked among the top in the nation, if not the world. Uh-huh. And of course, we've got the funniest police log items.
I increasingly tell people about the incredible diversity from Key West all the way to the Panhandle. We've got Atlantic Ocean. We've got Gulf Coast Ocean, the most extensive spring system, freshwater springs in the world.
Yeah.
Our incredible biological diversity, the bounty of the Florida Highwaymen, Zora Neale Hurston, Mary McLeod mm-hmm. Bethune, so many important early figures in the conservation movement. And I think, this podcast is a lot about what we love about Florida. But it also has to take a critical eye, because that's in a large part being overlooked or chipped away. And mm-hmm. it's important to fight for what you love. And the way I kind of fight and you kind of fight and the way we kind of fight is to raise awareness around some of these things that aren't so great.
Well, like we did a whole show on the Florida Sunshine Law, which was an incredible earth-shattering new law that a lot of other states copied and that our legislature chips away at every chance they get.
Yeah. And
that's something to be criticized.
Yeah. No question about it. As they do generally with home rule and trying to now limit what mm-hmm. can be amended to the state constitution by a popular vote. So, the worst thing that can happen is to wake up and realize these things are gone, only to recognize that you had no idea it was even slipping through your fingers. I think your work at least gives people an opportunity to monitor that and try and put their shoulder to the wheel when possible. And you can read all of Craig's articles, critical and praiseworthy of Florida, at floridaphoenix.com. And without question, one of the things we both like most about Florida is the remarkable ecological bounty. There's a good word for it. And one of those, of course, is sea turtles. And it's begun to be sea turtle nesting season. I think the traditional standard definition is between May and October. And our friends at visitsarasota.com want to remind everyone, no matter where they are in the state, but especially on the beaches in Sarasota County, that the sea turtle nesting season is here. So what does that mean? What are some things that you can do to help the sea turtles who are coming up on shore to nest? Of course, pick up lights after out. Yourself, pick up your trash, fishing line. Don't let balloons go free. If you go up for a day on the beach, pick up your cans and your bottles and your plastic waste and all of that kind of stuff. Also, if you're out on the beach, fill in those giant holes the kids may dig or you may dig. Sea turtles at times can get stuck in those. You know, they're coming up on shore and, you know, they have flippers, not legs. So it's not easy for them to move across the sand. And when they come across a giant pit that someone dug on the sand, those can be a huge impediment to getting where they need to be. And if you are living or staying on the beach, turn those lights off or replace the white, those incandescent, really bright bulbs with red or yellow turtle-friendly bulbs. We've got an episode in the archives all about sea turtles, and you can learn some more sea turtle-friendly tips there. But from the folks at visitsarasota.com to everyone on the beaches across Florida, it is sea turtle nesting season. Be mindful of your behavior to help them out.
One of the coolest things I ever saw on a Florida beach was a loggerhead laying its eggs. It was just incredible.
Ditto. Mine was not a loggerhead, but that is something you will never, ever forget. And those Sarasota beaches, if you're out there, they're safe. Most of those parks are open at night, and you don't even have to be in a state park sometimes. I mean, they will come into areas that have development and restaurants and everything else on them. And you find one of those and you will have really done something. And then obviously another tip would be leave the nest alone, please, for goodness sake. Leave the nest alone. All right. Florida Folk Festival, Craig, the 70th anniversary coming up this Memorial Day over in Red Springs.
One of the best things about Florida. We're talking about, you know, things that we love about Florida. One is the Florida Folk Festival, which is this incredible celebration of Florida's culture and heritage and artistic creativity all in one place.
Yep. And our guest today is someone who you ran across recently. It's the great performer Del Suggs. He is a singer, songwriter, guitarist, a native of Panama City Beach. He has been attending the Florida Folk Festival since the 70s. He has been performing there since the 1980s. You can find him online at saltwatermusic.com. This is going to be an exciting visit to the Florida Folk Festival, courtesy of Del Suggs.
And maybe he'll favor us with a song. Maybe. Del, thanks for joining us today. Let me start off by asking, how often have you been to the Florida Folk Festival?
I've actually played the Florida Folk Festival every year since 1983.
Wow.
But I first attended in 1978, I guess, when I was in college.
Dang. How has it changed over the years while you've been experiencing it?
Well, I tell you, the greatest thing about it is to see how it has really grown, not just in the numbers of people that come, but actually in the diversity of the programming. When I first started attending, it was a bunch of old white guys playing Appalachian music, you know, which is what most people think of when they think of a folk festival. Yeah. And over the years, it's really expanded, you know, and it features music from all over, you know, Florida, because Florida is just a real, not a melting pot. Florida is a salad bowl, you know, and people come to Florida and they bring their culture and they retain their own culture as they become a part of Florida. So that's one of the beautiful things about it, you know. And so, I mean, you can actually come to the Florida Folk Festival. You'll hear Greek music from Tarpon Springs. You'll hear Haitian music. You'll hear Cuban music. You'll hear, Romanian music. You'll hear Mexican music. You'll hear Appalachian music. And you'll hear a lot of music that's really written by Florida artists about Florida, which is really remarkable.
That's pretty cool. What do you know about how it got started? It was 1953, wasn't it? When it first launched?
Yeah, I think it started in 53. You know, 53 was kind of one of the first big folk scares, as they call it in the exhibit business, when folk music came big on the popular scene. You know, because if you think back in 53, that was like, you know, Pete Seeger and Weavers. Like the big hit on the radio was, you know, Goodnight Irene. mm-hmm. things like that. And so that was, you know, that was the first big folk scare. And then, of course, later on, we had Peter, Paul, and Mary and that folk scare, and, you know, mm-hmm. And it came around. So, you know, folk music became kind of a popular thing at the time. And somebody came up with the idea of putting on this festival there at the Stephen Foster Center. And so it became a huge event. And, you know, now in 72 and 73, when they moved it to Labor Day because of the great hippie scare of 1972. But it's just been a remarkable event.
Now, what's the great hippie scare of 1972?
So you got to put yourself back in that place. Jim. You got to remember that, you know, this is like the Woodstock era. And, you know, if you were around or read about the late 60s, you know, there were a lot of great music festivals going on everywhere. There was, you know, Woodstock, we all know about, and, you know, and the disaster at Altamont Springs. But you also, there's like the Miami Music Festival and the Atlanta Music Festival, and the great music festivals happening all over. And someone had begun to advertise the Florida Folk Festival pretty heavily in some college markets in Tallahassee and in Gainesville. And they didn't realize what was going to happen. And
College students would show up.
Numbers say that 100,000 students showed up at the Florida Folk Festival. And if you can only imagine 100,000 students there, mostly hippies. Mm-hmm. And they pretty much overwhelmed the little town of White Springs. And it just freaked out the locals so much. They actually shut down the festival for a year. And then they moved it to the fall, thinking maybe they wouldn't remember it.
Oh, man.
And they brought it back to the May. So it's kind of funny. And it's typically there's about 25 to 30,000 people attend over the course of the weekend. So
that's great.
You can imagine 100,000 naked hippies in the river in the spring of 1972 was not well received.
Why White Springs and the Stephen Foster State Park there?
Well, I mean, it has to do with Stephen Foster. You know, it's really amazing that, you know, we have a state song that was written by a guy from Pittsburgh.
And who never set foot in Florida.
Never came to Florida, you know, and the original versions, and you can actually see the original verses of the Swan of Old Folks at Home was actually way down upon the Petey River, which is in South Carolina. But his publisher said, Petey, that sounds kind of tacky. So he found another one, and he dropped a syllable and made it Swanee River instead of Suwanee, as we all know it to be pronounced. And so it just became a, you know, hugely popular song. And of course, Stephen Foster was, you know, was the Stephen Sondheim of his era. I mean, he was, you know, everything he wrote turned to gold. And so it became a big hit and was then embraced by our state government to become our state song. And it's a lovely song. But because of that and Stephen Foster's fame, they created the state park there on the Suwanee River. And it's a beautiful park. And it's a beautiful park to visit.
I'm trying to picture where you put 30,000 people, though.
Well, that's over the course of the weekend. So, you know, imagine 10,000 a day. And it's a huge park, you know, it's several hundred acres. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about a festival like this is you've got things going on all over the park. There are 14 different stages. You know, so there are over 100 performances each day, but spread out over 14 stages in between 10 in the morning and 11 at night, you can kind of spread things around pretty well.
When did this effort to make it more diverse, to get away just from the old white banjo pickers and make it more of a contemporary, living, breathing, moving forward sort of festival, as opposed to just hearkening back fondly to ye good old days?
I think all of that began in the late 70s, you know, in late 70s and early 80s. And as you could imagine, there was quite an initial pushback.
Sure.
But Gamba Rogers, who was, you know, one of my heroes and just a treasured friend and had played the festival for so many years, went to the committee that was looking to diversify the things. And he really encouraged it. And as people, you know, fought back against it, he finally raised his hand and said, "Would you deny your brothers a seat at the table?" And everybody just said, "Well, okay, you're right. You're right."
You might want to tell people more about who Gamble Rogers is. You know, they may not know him.
Was an amazing storyteller, guitarist, songwriter, a really multifaceted artist who was a major force in the music industry in the 70s and 80s. Unfortunately, died in the early 1990s, drowned trying to save a tourist who had been caught up in a ripped current. And they actually named Flagler Beach Park for the Gamba Rogers State Park now in his honor. But Gamble was an amazing artist. He told stories during his program, during his performances, that revolved around a town he called Ocklawaha, a mythical town set in Florida. And he had a whole cast of characters very much along the lines of William Faulkner in Yoakum and Potawatomi County. And he told these stories, and each of these characters had their own role they played. And each performance he did would involve these characters and these stories. And he was just, he was a national artist. In fact, he was one of the an artist whose obituary was featured on All Things Considered, you know, the day that he passed. So, you know, he's you know, of that caliber. In fact, he was a regular commentator on All Things Considered. So he carried a lot of weight. And when Gamble said, you know, would you deny your brothers a seat at the table? People understood that the gravity of that. Just, you know, if we have a folk festival, we've got to make it available to everybody and not just a select few. And that's what really opened the doors. And now you can hear everything there. And it's just an amazing thing to go and be a part of.
What are some of the more impressive acts that you've seen over the years? Some that you will live in your memory?
Well, you know, I've seen so many great acts. You know, we don't realize, you know, right off the top of your head, how many great acts come from Florida. But I'll never forget sitting in the amphitheater on Saturday night and hearing Bo Diddley perform. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, folks don't realize that Bo Diddley, you know, spent the last years of his life in just outside of Gainesville. You know, he had a farm in Hawthorne, I think. Huh. And lived down there. And, you know, so, you know, artists like that. There was a wonderful blues pianist and singer named Diamond Tooth Mary. And Diamond Tooth Mary McLean was Bessie Smith's half-sister. And so you can imagine the depth of her performances. You know, I mean, imagine actually hearing a relative of Bessie Smith. You know, and that's just, you know, that just shows the connections back there. You know, gosh, John Anderson, you know, Seminole Wind, you know, has been a regular mm-hmm. performer there. The Bellamy Brothers have been up and performed several times. Mel Tillis, I remember seeing Mel Tillis perform on the stage there. So, you know, just all sorts of really amazing performers have come through and been on that stage. And, you know, and some of them, you know, still keep coming back. You know, for example, Billy Dean. You know, Billy Dean told me his very first public performance was when he was in the eighth grade, and his eighth grade choir came over from Quincy to perform at the Florida Folk Festival. So, it really goes that deep.
Yeah. There's more, of course, than just the music. There's dance and storytelling, crafts, food. When you are not performing or watching music at the Florida Folk Festival, what do you like to partake in over there?
Well, you know, it's one of the great things is you can just walk from stage to stage. And unfortunately, I rarely you walk by and hear somebody else. Oh, there's Sam Pacetti performing right there. I've got to go listen to Sam for a minute. You know, oh, there's Jeannie Fitchin over there. So I got to go hear a little bit of Jeannie Fitchin. And next thing you know, it's taking you 2 hours to walk, you know, 100 yards because there's so many different artists performing that you get pulled away from. And that's one of the great joys of the festival is the surprises. I mean, you go, you look through the roster of people who are performing, you go, yeah, I want to see him, I want to see her, I want to see, you know, this band, you make the list of the people you want to see, and then you don't see half of them because you find somebody else that is good or better that you had never even heard of. So it's that wonderful gift of discovery that really makes it special.
Do people camp out there, or are there hotels in the vicinity for them to stay at?
Yeah, there are a lot of hotels. You know, White Springs is like 15 miles from the epicenter of Florida's tourist traffic, you know, I-10 and Interstate 75. So, you know, there are a million hotel rooms right at that intersection if you wanted to stay. But there are some hotels right in White Springs and some campgrounds around there too. There's unfortunately not enough room for everybody to camp in the park because that is reserved for the for those of us who are performing and exhibiting there. So you've got to stay outside the park. But there's nothing that says you can't come in and hang around the campground, which is where a lot of great fun happens.
Well, now what do you mean? What do you mean great fun? What do you mean? What happens at the campground?
Well, the campground is just magic. You know, I mean, that's when people wander from campsite to campsite and they swap songs with each other, and you never know who's going to show up and, you know, we'll be singing harmony with you, or you'll get to perform with her. And there's just great combinations of music that happen all the time, and things you would never expect. I will never forget once about 1:30 in the morning, I was walking down the between campsites, and I heard this cacophony of music going on in the distance, and I began to recognize this song, and I thought, what is that song? And I got closer, and it was Don Grooms and Dale Kreider and all these folk legends, and they're all huddled around singing this song. When I got closer, I realized they were singing "I Heard It Through the Grapevine." You know, not your typical traditional folk song, So, no. You know, it's the kind of, it's kind of a magic combination to just kind of run into something like that.
Your music has been described as saltwater music. Of course, your website, saltwatermusic.com. How do you define saltwater music?
Well, you know, today it's called trop rock. You know, it's the music that Jimmy Buffett plays and Zach Brown, Kenny Chesney, folks like that. Mm-hmm. So, but when I first started doing it, I was just doing songs that I had written about, you know, growing up in on the coast in Panama City Beach, Florida, and the things that were important to me. And so, as a friend of mine said, he said, Del writes love songs about boats. Yeah. And, you know, where other guys write love songs about girls, you know, but it was the sort of thing that I was into. And so I began to write these songs about what it was like to live and be a part of Florida. And I had to call it something. And back then I was afraid to call it folk music because people would think I was going to be doing Dylan imitation. And so I came up with the term saltwater music. And I've used that, you know, since the mid 70s, I guess, to describe what I play.
How did you get into that? Playing that kind of music?
You know, I just kind of stumbled on it. A lot of times when you're a musician, you know, you end up working with bands. And I started playing professionally in a rock band when I was in high school and worked my way through high school playing music. And then I worked my way through college playing in bands. Then the bands kept breaking up and they kept falling apart. You know, I was a bass player, you know, and it's pretty hard to do anything solo as a bass player. So I said, you know, if I'm going to have any success in this field, I got to be able to carry my own weight. So I started to learn to play the guitar and to sing and to write songs to make myself unique and different. And so that's really how I got into this. You know, I had all intentions of being Paul McCartney, but it just didn't work out that way because the band kept breaking up. So I said, okay,
I'm sure you were the cute one in the bands though.
Yeah, I wish.
You talked about being from Panama City Beach. You grew up mid-century there. What was life like in your childhood and growing up in that area?
It was a fabulous time to be there, to be on these beaches. And a friend of mine says, I asked him, he moved to Nebraska, and I said, don't you miss the beach? He says, I miss it every time I go back there. Because it's grown up, it's so changed. It's not like it used to be, you know. So it was an idyllic time to grow up there. And honestly, a lot of the things I write about in my songs about the beach are based more on memories than the reality of the current situation. Because we know how it is in Florida. We know how things, you know, how we're a tourist industry and we focus on that. And that's an important thing to be doing. But the fact of the matter is that if you grew up here at an earlier time, you do see what we've lost.
I talked to a fellow Florida native once who said being from Florida is like being the kid in the Sixth Sense because you're always seeing things that nobody else could see.
Exactly. Yeah. And you see a lot of ghosts, mm-hmm. you know, you see things that used to be there. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So we've talked a lot about the diversity of the acts, but are there certain themes that crop up over and over, regardless of the background of the people who are playing, that they talk about the same things over and over again?
Who write songs about the history of Florida. And it's not like any other state in the country. And I've traveled all over the country and I perform at music festivals all over the country. And other than maybe Texas, you won't hear songs written about the home state that celebrate the home state. But we have this whole group of songwriters in Florida that just write songs and tell stories about our state. And it's really remarkable. You know, it goes back to a guy named Will McLean. And Will McLean was known as Florida's Black Hat Troubadour. That's what Pete Seeger named him back in the 50s. And Will was from Chifley, Florida. And he traveled Florida and wrote songs about based on the legends and things that he learned as he traveled through Florida. And you could study Will McLean's music. In fact, there's actually a curriculum. You can study Will McLean's music and really learn the entire history of the state of Florida. It's really remarkable. I wrote a letter to the Secretary of State when Will was up for induction into the Artist Hall of Fame. And I said, Will McLean is essentially Florida's Washington Irving. Washington Irving, you know, wrote the stories of Rip Van Winkle and the Headless Horseman and all those things about upstate New York. And Will McLean wrote songs about, you know, the Wild Hog and Gulf Hammock and Hold Back the Waters of Lake Okeechobee and those great songs. And that had really inspired people to capture Florida's legacy in music. And that's what so many people do. And you can just walk from stage to stage and learn the entire history of the Sunshine State.
Is there a particular incident in Florida's history that has that people have written more than one song about?
There's been a lot of appreciation of the, you know, the great flood, hold back the waters of Lake Okeechobee that Will McLean first wrote the song about, you know, that the effect of the hurricane in the 1930s. So that's something that's always been a big topic that frequently gets covered. And there's certain characters too. There's a whole group of songs that have been written about the cattle country. Oh. You know, and most people don't realize that Florida is the second largest cattle producing, you know, state in the union. Yeah. You know? And so there's an entire cattle industry in the middle part of the state that a lot of folks have no idea exists. Remington came to Florida and did drawings and paintings of cow men, as they were called in Florida, not cowboys, cow men or cow hunters, they called them, because they turned them loose and they just would track them down in the wilderness.
Called them lowbrowed cow folk, as I recall. Yeah,
exactly. And because of that, I mean, there are a lot of songs have been written about those characters, Bone Mazel and some of those great folks that are famous in the and the cattle drives and things. That really fascinating. And again, this is all stuff that I didn't know about until I started going to the Folk Festival. I always tell folks, if you're a newcomer, if you have just moved to Florida, you need to go to the Florida Folk Festival. You'll learn all about your state. You'll learn everything that you never knew you needed to know.
I'm going to get back to this saltwater rock, trop rock topic for just a second. And I'm sure you've crossed paths with Jimmy Buffett many, many times. Could you ever foresee how popular this genre would become? He is an industry beyond the music, the concerts. He's got retirement homes and alcohol lines and restaurants. I mean, he has become an industry. And, you know, Kenny Chesney is the most popular, arguably, act in the country. And that was the kind of music you were doing almost 50 years ago now. Did you ever foresee that style of music, that sound, would become what it is today?
I'm being hailed now as a pioneer of trop rock. And a friend of mine told me, they said, anytime you're being hailed as a pioneer, it means you missed the bubble.
Yeah, where are the Del Suggs retirement homes?
Right, exactly.
And the Del Suggs Broadway show. Yes.
Jimmy Buffett is just, I mean, he is just a whirlwind. I mean, you know, he has this laid back persona, but he is just driven. He is just driven, and he is, you know, he's one of the top 10 wealthiest people in the entertainment industry. I mean, he's richer than Paul McCartney. You know, it's amazing because of the things that he's done, and he's earned it. He's worked hard and he's made it all happen. But it's remarkable. He's such a, you know, has this laid back persona of the, you know, of the beach bum on stage. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you, he goes 20 hours a day, you know.
Does he?
So it's just remarkable to see. You know, I think we've all kind of had this. All of us that have been involved in trop rock music. You know, Bertie Higgins, who is going to be performing on Saturday night at the festival. He's going to be there Friday night. Idea of paradise, living on the beach or living on a boat, and we all embrace that sort of thing. So it's you can certainly imagine how that could catch on and become a big rock styling.
Is there a particular act coming up in this year that you're going to make sure you don't miss? I mean, other than you.
Oh yeah, actually, I mean, there's several. There's just some great artists coming this year that I'm really excited. I mentioned Bertie Higgins. It's going to be there. This is Bertie's first time there. So and he's actually from Tarpon Springs. You know, a lot of people don't realize that. One of the cool things about, and I'll throw this in as an aside, one of the cool things about the festival is to perform there, you have to have a Florida connection. Hmm. You have to be from Florida or living in Florida. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Bertie is from Tarpon Springs and he's going to be there performing. And I'm really excited about seeing him because I've never seen him perform before. So that'll be fun. Also, John McEwen and the String Wizard. Now, John was most people know him as the wild fiddle player from the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Yeah.
But he lives down in the Sarasota area. And so he's going to be there with the String Wizards, and they are absolutely a phenomenal band. Just to hear them, what they do, you know, it's kind of a cross between like the old Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. It's a cross between bluegrass and acoustic and rock, all kind of pushed in together. And it's really, really exciting to hear that and what goes on there. Billy Dean is coming back. You know, Billy Dean is going to be there and perform again. And he's just a master on stage. And somebody that a lot of folks, again, don't realize as a Floridian is Jim Stafford.
Oh, yeah.
No, and Jim Stafford is, you know, is from the middle part of the state, and although he lives most of his time, you know, out in Branson, Missouri, where he has his own theater, he comes back to the festival every year, and he's going to be there this year. He's not even playing the main stage; he's just coming back to be a part of it. So you can see Jim Stafford perform on these little bitty stages around the festival grounds, and it's. And you can just go up and talk to him afterwards and get a chance to visit with him. He's just a wonderful guy. So it's just a real treat to see some of these acts.
I would imagine that ability to talk to the musicians, meet these folks, it's as big as the crowds are, it is a more laid back festival atmosphere. I can't imagine anyone's walking around there with 19 security guards and sunglasses and riding out of there in a black Suburban afterwards. So that kind of communal atmosphere, I'm sure, would be attractive to a lot of folks who enjoy these artists and want some sort of a more close-up experience with them.
Yeah, it's great. And another one of the great things about it is every artist that plays the main stage, which is the evening shows, the amphitheater is only, they only have performances from 6 until 11 at night. But when they're not on the main stage, they're doing little workshops and things. I mean, you can see Billy Dean perform on the main stage in front of 10,000 people. Then you go to a little side stage and see him do a songwriting workshop.
Huh.
And you know, he gets suggestions from the audience and you write a song right there on the spot. I mean, just really, really fun, easy stuff to do like that.
What are some other workshops?
Oh, gosh, there's songwriting workshops. There are different instrument workshops, you know, how to play the clawhammer banjo and, you know, how to play the ukulele and even some even more unique instruments that you'll get a chance to experience. And there are dance workshops where you can learn how to dance, mm-hmm. All the different dance styles. And the dance stage there, we haven't even touched on that. There's a dance stage, which, again, originally was old-time dance. And now it has just expanded and they've just blown the roof off. And it's a huge draw to the festival. I mean, so many people want to come and contra dance or square dance, and they have all these different callers and live bands that perform, and the huge crowds turn up. And then at night when it gets late, they turn on the light show there, and so you've got people doing contra dances and square dances, but to strobe lights and things. So it's you know, it's a really they've really modernized what goes on there. So you know, whatever you think of when you hear the word Folks Festival, it's way, way different than you can possibly imagine.
Del Suggs has been our guest. It is the 70th annual Florida Folk Festival this Memorial Day weekend at the Stephen Foster Folk and Culture Center, there by the Stephen Foster State Park in White Springs. Del will be performing all 3 days. He is the featured act on Sunday evening. You can find him online, saltwatermusic.com. You can find ticket information for the Florida Folk Festival at the State Park website. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Del, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the Folk Festival, and I look forward to getting over there someday.
Thanks. It's been a real treat.
Sure.
And Del, before you go, can you play us a little bit of my favorite song of yours, Magic Chair?
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to do that. yeah, this is my most recorded song. By other artists, and it's really funny because the song is called Magic Chair, and it's about those chairs that we all have at the beach that when you sit down, you can just feel your blood pressure go down as soon as your butt hits the seat, you know. And so I wrote it about that, and it's been recorded by a lot of people, and there's actually the whole Trop Rock Music Association that's out there. They did a survey, and this song actually came in as number 11 in the top 50 Trop Rock songs. So I mean, obviously Margaritaville is number one.
Yeah.
But I made it to number 11, so I'm really,
I like
really
this better. I like this better than Margaret.
Well, it's funny because, you know, the optimist in me says, it's amazing. You got to be number 11 of the top 50. Yeah. And the pessimist in me goes, oh, man, you were so close to breaking the top 50.
I drove all night just to get here. Been on the road too long. How will little things grow when you lose all sense of perspective? And I worry too much about paying the bills, fighting these battles and climbing these hills, running so hard till I gotta sit down. I got a magic chair. It sits on the beach and it takes my cares away. I got a magic chair. Sit down beside me. I got a magic chair. It sits on the beach and it takes my cares away. I got a magic chair. Sit down beside me.
It's all true.
Nicely done.
Every word of it's true.
Del Suggs, thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Well, that's a real treat right there, Craig. I know you're a huge, huge music fan. Anyone that follows you on Facebook or Twitter will recognize that. When did you first come across Del's music?
You know, I this is terrible. I didn't know about Del until before last year's Word of the South Festival in Tallahassee. And they contacted me and said, okay, we want you to come and talk about your books, but we're going to pair you up with a musician. And I said, really? What for? Well, we just think it'll be cool and it'll be up to you guys to work out what you're going to do. And they paired me up with Del. And I thought, you know, well, am I doing an interpretive dance or yeah. or what exactly? And what we ended up doing was Del would, we came
vocals.
Out. Yeah, Del would play a song and I would read a little bit from one of my books and then Del would play another song. And then we ended up with Magic Chair as a big sing-along in the auditorium, which was it was a lot of fun.
Nice.
It was a lot of fun.
I am not.
And I, of course, was happy to lend my famous monotone baritone to.
Yeah. I am not typically a festival person, being outside and kind of sweaty, muddy. The whole thing does not typically appeal to me. But, you know, White Springs is not far from where I am on Amelia Island. It's a couple, 2.5 hour drive, something like that. So I'll have to be sure to get over there one of these years. Have you been to the Folk Festival?
I have not been to the Folk Festival, but I've been to White Springs. I did a big series about Florida Springs and there. White Springs originally was there because of the springs, and they had 14 different hotels there to accommodate all of the people coming there for treatment from the springs for its magical properties. And they even had, I think, William Howard Taft and Teddy Roosevelt came to visit, and you can still see their signature on the hotel ledger in one of the places that's still
sadly
there.
The spring has dried up entirely. Yes. I remember that from one of our springs episode. We're getting to the point now where over 100 episodes in here where most episodes will reference something from a previous episode, and thinking about folklore and Florida's folk history and music, we've got previous episodes on Zora Neale Hurston and Stetson Kennedy, episodes on Florida's R&B history, including Ray Charles, an episode on Jacksonville and Southern Rock, a couple of episodes on Florida's spring. So if any of those sort of topics that were brought up in today's episode interest you, you can go back through the archives and find them.
Right. State parks, too. Remember?
Oh, absolutely.
We interviewed Eric Draper, the now retired head of the Florida State Park System, who said the most unusual experience he had was contra dancing at the Florida Folk Festival.
Good point. So we started this episode mentioning the Florida State Parks. We may as well end it there as well. Welcome to Florida.
Welcome to Florida.